Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Dear Diary, the doctor here again. Had a mental day today. Donna and I visited a library to pick up some books, and we figured the worst I'd get was a few late fees. Well, a lot of late fees. Well, maybe a life or death ordeal, which, to be fair, we did get. But, oh, yes, Sonics. I wanted to write you a reminder, Doctor, about your Sonic theft. Genetic imprints. You see, this River Song had one you, well, I mean me, apparently gave to her, and I don't actually like the idea of other people touching my stuff. So, here are three ideas I've devised for future iterations of your Sonic screwdriver. Please bear this in mind when building any future models, okay? Idea one, retinal scan. It will involve jamming your eye up against the Sonic for a few seconds to turn it on, which could be a problem if you're running. You might put an eye out. Second, fingerprint scanner. Third idea, to make sure nobody touches this, and I'm positive I'll never ever get quite desperate enough to implement this one, make a Sonic screwdriver that looks like a poo. Just a big silver turd. Huge steaming shit. Ta-ra! Good morning, or wait, is it morning for you? It might not be morning. Evening? Look, whatever time it is, I hope you're having a good one. Welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of The Doctor Is In. I am your host, Paul Verhoeven. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Hope you're enjoying Doctor Who at the moment. Jodie Whittaker is just knocking it out of the park. This week on The Doctor Is In, I have a very, very special guest. I thought I would zip back to classic Who. So I'm chatting with Janet Fielding, who played Tegan Javanka, the Fifth Doctor's companion. Actually, technically the Fourth Doctor and the Fifth Doctor's companion, but she's an Aussie. So, I mean, she has a really, really unique perspective on Doctor Who from the inside. So we chatted on the phone, and you'll be able to hear that interview later in the episode. Also, in companion piece this week, I'm looking at the absolutely gorgeous Captain Jack Harkness, and who wouldn't want to look at Captain Jack Harkness? But first, whose news is it anyway? This week in Whose News Is It Anyway, first up, Doctor Who Barbie. Look, I didn't ever think these two things would intersect, but, you know, marketing is getting pretty ambitious. So BBC Studios and Mattel have actually teamed up to release the first ever Doctor Who limited edition Barbie doll. It's going to be available in Australia at some very specific stores. It's over at, I think, Zing and EB Games are selling it almost exclusively. So it's Jodie Whittaker's Doctor in her trademark strappy rainbow t-shirt. She's wearing those gorgeous blue crop trousers. She's got the trench coat and the braces and the boots. It's a really good resemblance, actually. A little while back, there was a collaboration with The X-Files to release official Mulder and Scully Barbies. I don't need these things, but I really want them for no other reason than to just look across at Jodie and Barbie form occasionally and just nod, and Jodie, you know. So it's going to be available this December, just in time for Christmas. Hint, hint. Next up in Doctor Who news, Jodie Whittaker has come out on the record and said something which frankly made me very, very happy. I'm just going to read the quote, okay? "I'd love to work with Billy Piper," she said. "Rose was a brilliant character. I love what she brought to that role. It was engaging and strong and vulnerable and dynamic. I'd like to meet Rose." Can you imagine what would happen if Jodie Whittaker's 13th Doctor met Rose Tyler? I mean, I know they pretty much, well, I was going to say neatly wrapped up Rose's story. Because, I mean, full disclosure, we're going to talk about Rose at some point later on this season. Rose Tyler is one of my favorite companions. And I'm not super happy with the way they resolved her story, you know. Can't be with the Doctor? Well, he's a clone. But I would love to see the 13th Doctor meet up with Rose. She also went on to say she wouldn't mind meeting River Song, but I just feel like we're still a bit, River Song's still a bit recent. I would love to see some old companions. I'd love to see the 13th Doctor meet up with some classic companions. Finally, in Doctor Who news this week, speaking of classic, well, not classic companions in a traditional sense, but Big Finish Audio reunited David Tennant's 10th Doctor and Donna Noble, played by Catherine Tate, in some really great Big Finish radio dramas a couple of years back, I think. But here's the deal. We're getting another season. So there's going to be some more Doctor and Donna action. Jacqueline King is going to be coming back as Sylvia Noble, aka Donna's mother. And here's my favorite piece of news. In these audios, we're going to get the return of Bernard Cribbins, who plays Wilfred, Donna's grandfather. You know, Donna's grandfather. The guy who got trapped in the glass box. God damn it. I mean, I'm not entirely sure whether they're going to set these before the events that wrapped up Donna's adventures with the Doctor, or whether they're going to set them after. I think setting them after would be far, far riskier from a canonical perspective, but God, it'd be a nice way to just wash the taste out of my mouth of Donna getting a memory wiped. I'm still struggling with that. Anyway, I think it's about time to introduce our very special guest this week, Janet Fielding, aka Tegan, from Doctor Who.
Hello.
Janet, it's Paul. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. What was it like stepping into a very British institution like Doctor Who as an Australian? I mean, what was that like for you, that experience?
Coming into Doctor Who was really quite interesting, because I had been in England for 3 years, and I was going out with my ex-husband, who used to pull me up every time I sounded Australian. And I have to admit, that was kind of ultimately very upsetting.
Right.
What's wrong with sounding Australian? was how I viewed it. But I knew Doctor Who, of course, from my childhood in Australia, and my father and brothers were all big Doctor Who fans. But I hadn't realised quite how devoted SF fans are. You know, science fiction fans are hugely devoted. So that was a real eye-opener. But as an Australian, it was kind of... Sorry, that was my phone tinkling at me. It was kind of fun to get to use my Australian accent in a role. And it was, you know, I never viewed her as representing Australia. You know, she was herself. I can't stand it when people go, you know, Jodie Whittaker is not representing women as Doctor Who. She's Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah.
End of.
Yeah.
And as soon as you make people, you know, somehow stand for... then it's a real pain for the actor, and it's sort of anti-creative in my view. So Tegan was never representing Australia. She was Tegan, and she was probably the world's craziest air stewardess. certainly, I would have said that that she was a poor fit for a service industry. which I loved about her, because to me that made her funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Just... And I thought she was, and I thought she was amusing. You know.
Yeah.
You know, that's a sort of classic sitcom setup in a way.
Yeah, sure.
Although, you know, it was within the context of an action adventure story.
Right, right.
And but it was hilarious. When I come back to Australia, people go, "But you sound so Australian." And we don't sound like that. And I go, well, actually, we do.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it. When you hear an Australian voice in amongst all English voices, it's going to sound a lot more Australian.
Of course.
And, you know, the BBC kept on saying to me, the producer kept saying to me, more Australian, more Australian. It's not Australian enough.
What?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was sitting between... the Australians going, you're sounding too Australian, a criticism I just don't accept.
Sure.
Or you're not sounding Australian enough.
Right.
So I figured that I sort of was in the right ballpark if I was making both parties unhappy.
It's a very Australian thing to do sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a certain element of diversity in our personality, which personally I find very endearing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. You effectively created, like you said, somebody who is very ill-suited to, you know, being an actual air steward. Did you draw influence from anybody you'd ever dealt with on airplanes, or was she a complete... Like, were you taking a crack at any specific people?
If you've ever travelled on American Airlines...
Oh, here we go.
I mean, they're even worse now.
Sure.
But you know, really, those are some of the crankiest, air stewardesses and air stewards that I've ever encountered. And, I mean, there's an irony to that because, of course, the Americans at the time were known to for their services, for their service and their friendly service. Not on their aircraft, was my experience. Not on their aircraft.
Well, I know there's a certain... I don't know if you heard of this, but there's something called the Scully effect, and it's young women who get into fields like, you know, law enforcement or medicine because they're inspired by the example set by Dana Scully from The X-Files. Do you think anybody's ever gotten, chosen a specific career, potentially one, you know, serving food for people very high up or, you know, maybe something more adventurous because of Tegan? Do you think you've changed anyone's lives career-wise?
Well, I mean, I have done quite a number of fan conventions over the years.
Right.
And they're always very interesting because women come up to me and tell me, you know, they got into whatever because of Tegan. So, I mean, there's a few that stand out. There were two women in LA who became NASA scientists.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, I was hugely flattered by it.
Yeah.
And amazed, I might add. Yeah. Yeah, a little bit surprised, but hey, whatever.
Sure.
And maybe it was Tegan's attitude, you know, I'm not taking nonsense from anybody and I don't care who you are.
Sure.
That inspired them, although that seemed to be the situation. And women going into the sciences still experience quite a bit of that.
Yeah.
And then there was another woman who... And I remember this because it was very specific, who she's a battle coordinator in the Air Force, so she sits in the back of the plane coordinating the airstrikes.
Oh, my God.
So she was really interesting. I wouldn't have said that, you know, that a pacifist, you know, a series which, you know, essentially looks at non-violent ways of resolving our differences. You know, it's interesting that it should inspire somebody who is, shall we say, a little on the, you know, certainly, well, weaponized.
Yeah, it's plane adjacent, you know, it's look, you've got the key ingredients. You've got planes, you've got, you've got travel, you've got conflict resolution of a sort, I guess.
Yeah, but it's not the kind of conflict resolution that Doctor Who espouses, that way.
No, it's a very different show, I think.
Yeah.
I had something I wanted to run by you, Janet, and this is kind of this relates to you having, influenced people down under. So my fiance, Tegan Higginbotham, she... This is a crazy story. So she was, she was in utero. She was in her mum's tummy, and her mum, Kaz, went into labor. And this is, 30 years ago, pretty much around now. So Kaz goes into labor, and Kaz and her husband, Kev, have agreed to call her Mary. So they've agreed that she's Mary. And then Kaz needs to go quite urgently into the room and get operated on and, have a C-section. So the administrator wanders up to Kevo, old Kevo, who is promptly asked what name he wants to give the baby. And realizing that no one is around to stop him, and because he's such a big fan of Tegan from Doctor Who, he writes Tegan down.
Oh, brilliant. That's brilliant. That's excellent. It's not excellent for the mother who was doing the hard work at the time. But it is amusing. On the other hand, he would have got a serious telling off if I'd been around.
Oh, excellent. So you would have chewed him out.
Too bloody right.
So, okay, well, here's a...
How dare he while she's doing all the hard work?
Oh, my God. At least she wasn't called Adric. I mean, that's, small mercies.
Oh, yeah. that is true, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. What was it like? Because I know, you know, I know Tegan's reappeared in the Big Finish dramas. What was it like having to get back into character after all those years? Because you've said that, you know, you're not Tegan. She's not like you, you know, exactly. So what was it like having...
Peter Davison might disagree with you.
Really, really?
We have a very jokey relationship. We're all friends. And Sarah Sutton,
yes,
who played Nitsa,
yes,
she kind of adjudicates in the middle. So, you know, yeah. We have huge laughs. But, you know, Peter and I take the mick out of each other all the time. So it's fun. People who come in as guest artists are kind of like, what on earth is going on?
Yeah, I got that impression. Yeah. It does seem like you have formed kind of a ragtag family unit, you know, which is the most Doctor Who dynamic you can get, really.
Yeah, it is very ragtag family. And I always say I think the dynamic from Peter and I comes from our childhood, you know, because he's the only male among three, you know, with three sisters, and I'm the only female with three brothers. So we're, you know, our families were like mirror images, although I'm the eldest and he was the second child.
I got a question that I was going to run by you. I know that Doctor Who at times deals with how strange it is for companions to adjust to normal life once they stop travelling with the Doctor. But what's it like as an actor who plays a companion to finish, to segue into, you know, like a regular life, I guess? Like, how's the adjustment process, you know, for a companion off the air?
Off the air?
Yeah.
I found it a little bit uncomfortable, if I'm honest.
Okay.
You know, because when we were doing the show, initially, England only had three channels.
Right.
And with the fourth channel coming on stream while we were doing the show.
Mm.
And so the audiences were huge by today's standards. Like, you know, we were 9.5 to 11 million
in
the UK.
Oh, my God.
Plus, you know, a big international audience in, you know, Canada, Australia, the United States, you know, loads of places.
Sure.
And I found it a bit freaky-deaky, if I'm honest. and it felt like having a peeping Tom, you know?
Right.
Because when you're off air, you're... I can remember I got back from the United States and went round the corner for a meal with my then husband.
Mm.
And I was so tired, and I put my head down on the table, and he said, get your head up. People will think that you're pissed.
Oh, right.
And I went, oh, for heaven's sake. And it was that kind of thing. You felt continually like people were judging, and, you know, and you get kids saying, Tegan, you know, screaming out the street at you. And the more I can get away from this, the better.
Right, right.
You know, because you kind of forget that bleed over, you know, from one to the other.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in terms of career, in those days, being well known for something wasn't a plus.
Right.
That didn't change until the mid to late 80s when, you know, you had the soap stars starting to come through. Actually, that would have been, yeah, the really late 80s, early 90s, really.
Right.
So it wasn't a pick-up because people went, well, we can't cast her as the Australian in this because people would think we only know one Australian.
Of course.
And people would go, well, we're not casting her as English because people know that she isn't.
Oh, of course.
And that was how it worked in those days.
Right.
And so it wasn't... And also in those days, I was in my early 30s when I finished doing the show.
Mm-hmm.
And by that stage, the role for women just, like, disappeared. It was, yeah, like, where'd they go?
Right.
How come there's nothing in the script for a woman of my age? And there just wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
I can remember going to an audition for, you know, one of these rare roles for a woman in her early 30s. And sitting next to somebody who said to me, it was like somebody turned a tap off on my 32nd birthday.
Oh, God. Really?
And it's still not great for the women, you know, compared to the men.
Of course.
It's so much better than it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, like, I mean, the show has... Doctor Who's always been a big... a big deal for, you know, representation, and it's been gorgeously progressive over the past few years. And now we've got, you know, now we've got Jodie as the Doctor, and she's absolutely killing it. What was it like for you watching her on screen? Like, did it feel like a watershed moment? Did it feel like it was, you know, not a moment too soon? What were your reactions watching the episode?
Well, it's really interesting because if you'd asked me 3 years ago, as indeed somebody did, whether I thought there should be a female Doctor,
yeah,
I would have been worried that she was representing all women.
Right.
You know, going back to the theme earlier. Hmm. And I would have worried for the actress herself.
Yeah.
You know, that she was on a no-win, you know, she was in a no-win situation. But I think, A, the gender debate has just moved on so much in the last few years. You know, the whole thing about gender fluidity and what does gender mean has just exploded as a conversation in our culture.
Yes.
A. B. In Doctor Who itself, the way was just prepared so beautifully by Michelle Gomez playing Missy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that you just looked at me and went, yes. And then, so it just seemed like a natural progression, really.
Sure.
Why not? And I think it certainly nails where popular culture is at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's so many women heroes out there just kicking butt, and no one's questioning it. I mean, at least no one I know. Like, it just feels...
Well, they are. There's plenty of people questioning it because you can see them on Twitter.
I guess I'd try and block them out.
We're called trolls.
Yes, yes. The eggs. You know, the anonymous creeps. But yeah.
And I get why Peter, but I also get why Peter Davison was not so in favour. You know, because he was saying, I think it's important for boys to have a positive role model, and there aren't that many.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, Doctor Who is the positive role model. So I get his argument as well. I do. I profoundly disagree with him. That's something that would not, you know, does not come as a surprise to him.
Sure, sure.
But I just think in the last few years that argument has moved on so much that, you know, my view has changed. I would have agreed with Peter a few years ago.
Right.
But my view has changed.
Yeah, and, you know, it's good to be able to, you know, you're allowed to change your opinions. You're allowed to, you know, listen to people and evolve, and you're allowed to hold your own opinions. It's I find it strange that in a fan base that is so... In a fan base for a show that is about openness and fairness and love, that people can get, sometimes some people can just get caught up in the hatred a little bit, and it's been nice to see the groundswell of adoration for this new incarnation of the Doctor, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, to me, Doctor Who's always been about some very, very positive values indeed.
Yeah.
And by and large, fans are really... you know, rather sweet and rather lovely, and, you know, are a positive force in amongst us.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, you do get the others as well.
Oh yeah.
But I'm pleased to think that they're a small minority.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
They're a loud minority, but they're small.
That's the thing, yeah. It's all about the volume, which, you know, is a kind of a running theme of Tegan as a character, volume. So, look, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I just want to let you know that once this call finishes, I'm going to head into the next room and I'm going to tell my soon-to-be father-in-law, Kevin, what you said about him. And I think he will blush very hard.
Yeah, just tell him he was well out of order. Well out of order.
Oh, you're going to make his night, and you're also going to make his wife, I think, punch the air triumphantly. Every week on The Doctor Is In, this season at least, there is a new segment called Companion Piece. It's called that because I enjoy stupid puns, and I also enjoy the companions in Doctor Who. I think the world of Doctor Who is so interesting when viewed from the perspective of somebody who isn't, you know, an omnipotent time god. So this week in Companion Piece, we are looking at someone who will swiftly undermine the premise I've just laid out, and that is Captain Jack Harkness, because he is... sort of an immortal. So, this week on Companion Piece, pansexual space rogue, Captain Jack Harkness. The thing I like about Jack Harkness is he's so bloody complicated, okay? So, back during Chris Eccleston's season on Doctor Who, we'd already had the Doctor and we had Rose, and they'd been flirting their way across time and space, and in comes this handsome prat, Captain Jack Harkness. So, In the episode The Empty Child, Rose and the Doctor meet Jack during the Blitz in London, and he has this ship, and he has a uniform, and he's got swagger, and he's sort of your, I mean, at least on the outside, he appears to be your traditional macho action hero, only he isn't, because this is Russell T. Davies' version of Doctor Who, so we find out Jack isn't working for the Allies. He's a former time agent, and he's a bit of a con man, and he's a scoundrel, and he has this weird memory gap of 2 years, so he's got this kind of Jason Bourne thing going on. And after seeming like a real creep, he eventually redeems himself by, I think he takes an exploding bomb on board his ship, and then he ends up traveling with the Doctor and Rose and Mickey. And then we get a handful of episodes with what I like to call space friends. You know, a bunch of mates and the Doctor hooning around, having adventures, getting along like a house on fire. It was so lovely to see the TARDIS, not just as a box with a lonely Doctor in it, but with a crew, right? So you have a ship and a crew. It was a really interesting new dynamic for Doctor Who. And we're finally seeing it again this season, but we'll get onto that later. Anyway, so Eccleston's season wraps up and Captain Jack is killed by Daleks. It happens. It's one of the risks of running with the Doctor, I guess. Only what happens less often is being resurrected by Rose Tyler, who at the time was infused with energy from the TARDIS and had become this bad wolf thing. It's complicated. So Rose and the Doctor, you know, they mourn Jack and they leave. And then Jack wakes up and he's alone and he somehow uses a time manipulator to port back to 1869. And he spends the entire 20th century living out his life on Earth, waiting for the Doctor to reappear. And because he's been infused with bad wolf energy, he can't die. So he's basically Wolverine at this point. He solves problems with Torchwood in a way that the Doctor doesn't approve of. See, Torchwood was a spin-off of Doctor Who, and Torchwood are kind of an edgy gang of MI5-style badasses. And when Tennant's Doctor meets up with Jack in the episode Utopia, they clash pretty badly over his methods. So next, after he and the Doctor and Martha and most of Earth are imprisoned by the Master and eventually escape, Jack bids the Doctor farewell and heads back to Cardiff to lead Torchwood again and returns as a much lighter and friendlier version of the character. So Torchwood goes to some very weird, very dark places. Now, I won't go deep into Torchwood lore here as this is a Doctor Who podcast, but Jack Harkness is also noteworthy for being bisexual. So John Barrowman, who plays Jack, is gay, but having this hypersexual, really flawed, complex, sexually open, brazen character in Doctor Who that people really adored across both shows and across all demographics of viewers makes him this vital, iconic part of the show's history. Also, his adventures with Torchwood have continued thanks to Big Finish. So once you're done with the show, both shows, you can hit the audio plays. Now, I should probably finish by pointing out that there is a recurring character in Eccleston and Tennant's Doctor Who series called the Face of Bo. It's sort of this big, weird, gelatinous head trapped in a vat, and the Doctor keeps talking about him, and he's got this really lovely leitmotif that the composer Murray Gold did, and it's implied that he's some sort of, like, cosmos-spanning omnipotent being. And then what happens is at the end of the Utopia story arc, Jack and Martha and the Doctor are on this pier. And I think Captain Jack, and I'm paraphrasing it, but Captain Jack basically sits there and wistfully remembers he used to be like the prettiest guy on the Beauchamp Peninsula. And then he heads off. And I could be mangling that quote. But the basic idea is that Captain Jack lives for so long that he ends up becoming a huge head in a jar. I mean, I guess that's one of the downsides of immortality. And you know, Captain Jack is just, he's just gorgeous, even as a head in a jar. And those weird dangly things on the sides, I mean, that's nice. It gives you something to hang on to. Anyway, I cannot stress this point enough. Captain Jack is knockout gorgeous and absolutely wonderful. And you know, what a guy. It absolutely breaks my heart to say this, but that's all the time we have for this week on The Doctor Is In. Hope you've enjoyed the episode, and hope you enjoyed the interview with Janet Fielding. Janet, thank you so much for coming in to have a chat. Don't forget to head across to iTunes and subscribe. And if you enjoyed the show, if you enjoyed The Doctor Is In, head across to Twitter and Facebook and tell everybody about it. If you want to catch up on all the incredible guests that we've had on past episodes of The Doctor Is In, all you've got to do is head across to thedoctorisin.show. If you bring up the page, which is just, it's a new website and I'm still sort of reeling at how pretty it looks, you'll be able to check out interviews with people like Jodie Whittaker. Jodie was on last week. We've also chatted with Christ, who else? Matt Lucas of Little Britain, who played Nardole. We chatted with host of Whovian's Rove McManus. We've chatted with Stephen Friggin Moffat. Sarah Dollard, a wonderful Aussie writer who wrote the episode Thin Ice. Tegan Higginbotham, Justin Hamilton. Brian Minchin, the executive producer of Doctor Who. Bridie Connell. Just, it's packed. The website's jam-packed with wonderful interviews. And now we can add Janet Fielding to the mix. Bloody Tegan Jovanka. So don't forget to tune in for another jam-packed episode of The Doctor Is In next week. And good God, what a time to be a fan.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.